Carson's young standards are his standards, but in our school, the standards we set for kids are higher than that.
Students and staff at Wasilla High School react to a talk by Congressman Don Young. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, students from Tanana speak out about the cycle of abuse at the Elders and Youth Conference.
If you experience sexual abuse, you need to report it. But what difference does that make? They still send abusers back to villages to prey on us.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The principal of Wasilla High School says her students are shaken after a visit from Congressman Don Young yesterday. Young, known for brash talk throughout his four decades in office, spoke to students about suicide and gay marriage in a way the principal describes as hurtful. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Wasilla High Principal Amy Spargo says Young spoke to about 120 students and took questions.
Congressman Young's standards are his standards, but in our school, the standards we set for kids are higher than that.
It started to go downhill, she says, after a teacher asked about Alaska's high suicide rate and framed her question by telling Young that a student at the school took his own life last week. As first reported by Alaska Dispatch News, Young said suicide shows a lack of support from friends and family. Spargo says it was insensitive.
Our students took offense to that. I took offense to that.
A spokesman for Young didn't return messages by deadline, but said in a written statement the congressman was being frank and forthright, but acknowledged he should have been more sensitive given the recent tragedy. Spargo says one student voiced his disagreement to Young, saying he'd been taught that suicide was a function of depression. Spargo says Young didn't take it well and the discussion escalated.
The student eventually did, with emotion, say to Congressman Young that the student we lost had friends and that he had support and his family loved him.
Young later said the boy needed to learn some respect. But Spargo says she's proud of how all the students handled themselves.
We spend a lot of time talking at our school about how we treat people. And when somebody treats someone in a way that's disrespectful, we call foul on that. And really what our students did was they called foul on the way they were being spoken to.
16-year-old Danica Ingersoll arrived at the assembly late. She missed the exchange about suicide, but heard Congressman Young condemn gay marriage.
He made it really clear that he thought it was morally wrong and out of the question was one of the things that he kept repeating.
She also said he brought up animals, saying something like, if you put two bulls together, they don't produce a calf. That didn't go over well either, she says.
People were whispering and shuffling in their seats. It was just an uncomfortable place to be.
Classmate Reagan Johnson also missed the suicide comments, but heard Young disparage gay unions.
It was kind of abrasive, and he brought in a lot of statements that were a little hurtful to our school, I think, just because we are a safe space, and it was a little harsh.
On ADN.com, the story quickly attracted hundreds of comments. Many thought the reaction to Young's remarks was a case of political correctness run amok. Young is 81 years old and has been in office since 1973. It's not the first time his frank talks with teens has raised eyebrows. He once used a crude term for a sexual act in talking to Fairbanks students about the photography of Robert Mapplethorpe. Spargo, the principal, says some parents are questioning her judgment in allowing the congressman to speak to students.
They are thinking that I should have seen that coming, but I've had really great experiences with kids interacting with our national leaders. It's a wonderful opportunity for them to learn and see our leaders and role models in action. So I had no reason to believe that it would become a hurtful experience for them.
Young's Democratic challenger, Forrest Dunbar, agrees Young's comments were insensitive, but says he's sure the congressman is sorry he said them. Dunbar says he doesn't intend to exploit the error for political gain. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Tanana 4-H Club returned to the Elders and Youth Conference yesterday, following up on their emotional presentation at last year's conference. During that talk, each 4-H member told the audience that they'd been molested, abused, or neglected, and that they were tired of it. This time, First Alaskans Institute, which hosts the conference, was more prepared for the intense feelings that the 4-H presentation might stir. A volunteer counselor in the audience was available to anyone who needed to talk. One 4-H member, 17-year-old Ashley, identified herself as a victim of sexual abuse. She listed off statistics about Alaska's high rate of sexual abuse and domestic violence, and she chided adults for not doing more to protect children from it.
If you experience sexual abuse, you need to report it. But what difference does that make? They still send abusers back to villages to prey on us. They don't change. They're still this sick, twisted person. This is our time to come out and speak. I challenge every one of you to stop keeping this a secret and protect our children to save our future.
The young people talked about how their families have been affected by things like rape, domestic violence, and substance abuse. A few took the opportunity to speak out against Ballot Measure 2, which would legalize the use and sale of marijuana.
Hi, my name is Linda. I'm 15 and I'm against legalizing marijuana. I may be young, but I'm already sick of the negative effect that marijuana has done to my community. It has destroyed my village. We have crime and outstanding teen usage.
As the legalization initiative is written, if voters approve and legalize pot, there is nothing stopping people from bringing it into villages. The kids also spoke a lot about spice, synthetic marijuana that can cause hallucinations, seizures, and psychosis. They said they've been terrified when they were around family members who were using it. Group leader Cynthia Erickson said a few months after the kids returned from last year's conference, she asked them if they thought anything had changed in their village of Tanana. They said nothing had. A few months later, in May, a Tanana man shot and killed State Troopers Sergeant Patrick Johnson and Trooper Gabe Rich. The kids looked up to the troopers and were devastated.
But I said, all of you are changing. Don't get discouraged. It took 50 years to get this dysfunctional. Seven kids can't walk on stage and expect to change overnight. But you are changing. You won't drink and do drugs with a baby in you. You won't molest. You won't rape. You are the change. We are the ones we have been waiting for. By one child changing, it changes a whole village. One healthy child does make a difference.
After the presentation, Erickson said the 4-H kids were starting to get a sense of how they impact other youth around the state. Some got to travel to Bethel and Ruby to talk and meet with other young people going through the same struggles. The Tanana 4-H Club will again take the stage this year at the AFN convention. Alaska's largest Native organization will vote on candidate endorsements on Saturday morning. The Alaska Federation of Natives Board of Directors has drafted two resolutions that will be heard on the final day of the AFN convention in Anchorage. The resolutions call for the re-election of Senator Mark Begich and the endorsement of Bill Walker for governor and Byron Mallott for lieutenant governor. Mallott is a former president of AFN. Resolutions are typically decided on a voice vote. Roll call votes, however, are not unheard of. In that case, regional caucuses will discuss the resolution with their delegates, and a caucus leader will then cast the vote on behalf of each group. AFN's co-chairs, Tara Sweeney and Anna Hoffman, are on opposite sides when it comes to the Senate race. Sweeney is the co-chair for the Sullivan campaign. Hoffman has been actively involved in Begich's campaign. Delegates will also vote Saturday on resolutions to oppose marijuana legalization, reduce Chinook and Chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery, and support juvenile justice reform during the 2015 legislative session. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new book takes a look at Alaska animals that aren't always appreciated.
Even what we consider the most common species that we don't think about, they really do lead remarkable lives.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Geology and climate are interacting in the Brooks Range, sending masses of debris down mountains toward the Dalton Highway. As KUAC's Dan Ross reports, one of the moving debris lobes has prompted a plan to relocate the road.
The quarter to 1 mile section of the Dalton Highway is near milepost 219 in the Brooks Range, just downslope of a massive mound of soil, rock, and vegetation. It's a situation that makes Alaska Department of Transportation Northern Region Materials Engineer Jeff Curry nervous.
You wouldn't necessarily recognize it as a hazard because from the road it looks like a big hill right next to the road. The problem is that the hill is moving, and it's moving towards the highway.
If the debris lobe keeps moving, it could stop or hinder traffic on the only road to the north slope.
The expectation is that when it gets to the highway, it will either overtop the highway or push it out of the way as well. In either case, it'll be it'll close the highway temporarily until we can maintain it, and then it will become a continual ongoing maintenance nightmare to keep the road open.
The debris lobe at mile 219 is the closest of 23 identified within a mile of the Dalton Highway that are slowly inching downhill toward the road like glaciers.
They seem to be kind of a unique phenomenon in this part of northern Alaska.
How I describe these are slow-moving landslides and permafrost.
That's Margaret Darrow, an associate professor of geological engineering at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's part of a team studying the debris lobes along the Dalton. The work includes tracking their speed.
It appears that they are moving faster in recent years, and the current rate for the one closest to the highway, it's moving about 15 feet a year. So it will take less than 10 years to reach the highway at its current rate.
Darrow and the other scientists hypothesize that the lobes formed as glaciers retreated, and their movement has accelerated with warming temperatures.
There was a buildup of material in these cirque-like features up high, some sort of critical mass of material that then started to move.
Darrow and her colleagues have measured and drilled into the lobe at mile 219, enabling calculation of what would happen if it hits the highway.
It would be a 50-ton dump truck load a day.
Darrow and DOT's Curry estimate moving the highway will buy several more years at mile 219 unless the debris lobe there speeds up similar to another one in the area that's much farther from the road.
If frozen debris lobe A were to detach and move at a comparable rate to FDLD, that would hit the road within a year.
Curry says the current plan is to relocate the Dalton Highway 400 feet west, a project that's expected to happen within the next 5 years.
I call it the runaway option, but it's not going to be a long-term solution unless it stops on its own or unless we can come up with a way to stop it.
Curry adds it's possible the current highway may act like a dam for the sliding debris or provide a place for it to fan out, alleviating any threat to the new road. Beyond the new alignment lies the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The line is buried in that area, and Alyeska Pipeline Service Company does not consider the debris lobe a serious threat. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaskan engineers and builders are pushing the envelope in the quest to build ever more energy-efficient houses. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, some of those innovations are making their way into residential construction.
UAF professor Tom Marsick has built what he says is the world's most efficient house, a small, airtight structure that he and his wife and some friends built in Dillingham 3 years ago.
It's extremely insulated. We are talking about 28 inches thick walls, just to put into perspective.
Those thick walls are rated at R90, nearly four times more than the required R21 rating for walls, and the ceiling's R140 is nearly triple the required R49 rating. Marsick, who teaches sustainable energy, says on most days he can warm his small, airtight home with about the same amount of energy it takes to run a hairdryer.
Last year, it cost us about $150 to heat the home for the entire year.
Marsick says he was inspired to build the house after spending a few winters here in Fairbanks teaching at the main UAF campus. Cold Climate Housing Research Center President and CEO Jack Hebert marvels at the work of Marsick and others he calls pioneers of efficient home building. He includes Torsten Klupp, a Fairbanks area builder, who, like Marsick, has constructed highly efficient homes that are super insulated and that often employ sustainable energy heating systems.
There's amazing things being done in Alaska by very creative people like Tom, like Torsten, like others in the state who have always been pioneers.
But Hebert says not all the advances developed by those pioneers in their quest for a home that requires little, if any, additional energy to heat will make their way into mainstream home building because some of those features are too expensive or unappealing to most home buyers.
I think these pioneers and creative people right now that are approaching net zero with their passive houses and the work that they're doing on extremely energy efficient envelopes, small homes, extremely admirable. But how can we incorporate that in the mainstream where the market says, I don't want to live in a house like that or I can't afford it?
That's the challenge that green home builders like Aaron Welterland confront. Welterland's Fairbanks-based company, WV Builders, touts its line of energy-efficient and affordable homes. He says most of his customers tend to be first-time home buyers, often young families, or people temporarily here like military personnel or contractors. Welterland says home buyers in the interior have increasingly shown a preference for energy-efficient homes in recent years, not coincidentally since the price of heating oil began its rise to $4 a gallon. But he says he must weigh how many of those features a prospective home buyer is willing to pay for, because such features as super insulated windows and ground source heat pumps, which extract heat from underground, all add to the upfront cost.
So we as builders are trying to find ways constantly of how do you give people the best house that they can afford, the most energy efficient house that they can afford, for cost that is reasonable to them.
Welterland says despite such incentives as rebates up to $10,000 offered by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and the payback that energy-efficient features promise, many homeowners still just can't get past the sticker shock of, for example, a $20,000 ground source heat pump.
Yes, the ground source heat pump is still more expensive, but it's about 50% cheaper to operate. So if we can convince the client to spend some money out of their own pocket at the beginning, then you have a heating cost, which is now 50% less. So you're heating the house for $110 a month in winter. It's kind of becomes unbeatable very quickly in the long term.
Hebert says that shows there's a demand for energy-efficient homes. But for many, it's a demand that has limits based on cost.
The market is really the loudest voice. If the market starts to demand energy efficiency, a highly efficient heating appliance over a commercial range in the kitchen, then that market demand will start to drive where the builders go.
Hebert says building on that progress won't be easy and will require educating homeowners by getting the word out about breakthroughs in efficiency and introducing them into the marketplace, then making the case on investing more now to reap the energy savings later. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Alaska Native elders are 5 times more likely to be injured in a fall, but there are simple ways for elders to reduce fall-related injuries. Get an eye exam every year. Stay informed about medications that can cause dizziness. Exercise regularly to increase strength and balance. And keep your home clutter-free. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
A new district, Senate F, was created with last year's state redistricting plan, and now two candidates with solid ties to the area want to represent it in Juneau. Educator and Democrat Pat Chesbro is challenging longtime Republican House Representative Bill Stoltz for the seat. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Senate F is regarded as the gateway between the Matanuska-Sioux Sittner borough and the easternmost Anchorage suburbs. It stretches from Palmer and the outskirts of Wasilla to Chugiak. Republican Bill Stoltz has served some outlying Palmer voting precincts for many terms in the State House. But the Democrats have positioned a strong challenger. Pat Chesbrough has served the area for years, too. Chesbrough was a Palmer teacher and school principal for 25 years, did a stint as superintendent of the Matsu Borough School District, taught at UAA, and administered a statewide federal education grant.
You know, I have experience in institutions, too, and I think at some point in time, unless you kind of shift your focus a little bit, sometimes you lose perspective. And as I read about and learn about what's happening in the legislature, I think I became just more convinced that people needed a viable choice.
Chesbrough has one legislative run behind her. She ran against Stultz in 2008. Stultz, first elected in 2002, has co-chaired the House Finance Committee from 2008 to this year. Before that, he was vice chair of House Finance. He says next session legislators will have to make some tough budget decisions, many of them regarding social services and state pension obligations.
Fiscal analysts have warned us about another $250 to $300 million in increased pension obligation costs that are going to be before us. Notwithstanding the $3 million forward funding of that to help pay down that debt. It's the issue of, the best way to control the spiral of those costs. And the three biggest drivers are Medicaid and welfare increases. In FY06, I think it was $360 or $380 million. Now it's over $700 million.
Chesbrough says UAA data indicates state spending is, quote, $1 billion more than conditions allow. And one place to look for cuts would be proposed capital projects.
For example, let's take the bridge. I think people are underestimating the amount of infrastructure development that needs to happen on the Matsu side when that bridge is done. Who's going to pay for that?
That bridge is the Knik Arm Crossing, and it gets Stultz's support.
I'm in support of it with a caution of the cost, but I think the opportunities that it represents are pretty big. In conjunction with the gas line development and the opportunity to create a real foundational economic base in the valley right now is a great opportunity.
They differ on the Susitna-Watonna Dam, too. Stultz supports the hydro project. Chesbrough says the dam benefits only the rail belt, and she would favor small, localized, renewable projects to benefit Bush communities. The two candidates spar on educational issues as well.
I believe that we have given education a short shrift in last year's, not just in funding, but sort of our attitude towards educators and education. And I think that needs to shift.
Chesbrough supports state funding for preschools and forward funding for school districts. Stultz points to population growth in the Matsu and the current range of educational choices there.
Our delegation and myself as well are going to work on making sure that we have places to put their kids. And that's just not our brick and mortar, but that's opportunities for homeschool, charter school, and looking at the customer side of the counter on education and making sure that we have educational opportunities that are relevant and accountable to what's best for our students.
Both candidates have reservations about marijuana, and both have some innovative ideas. Chesbrough says she'd like the state to invest $25 million in an angel fund to help local entrepreneurs. Stultz says he'd like to continue work to support an elected state attorney general's office. He says an elected AG would be more responsive to criminal issues. Election day is November 4th. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Bill Sherwanet knows a thing or two about Alaska wildlife. The Anchorage-based writer has spent decades tramping through swamps, forging rivers, and hiking mountains, studying and writing about Alaska's critters. From the superstars like grizzly bears, moose, and caribou to the lowly wood frog, even shrews and spiders have been given respectful literary treatment. Sherwanet has a simple philosophy about his relationship with wild animals.
They pull me deeper into the world. They pull me out of myself into the world. And I begin to notice what's going on around me. And I'm hoping that through these stories, it'll get people thinking about their own relationships with animals and that maybe they will pay more attention to the birds that are coming into their feeders or the squirrels in their yard or the moose that walk through the neighborhood, whatever it is. But it's actually, to me, it's quite an amazing thing that we share, especially living in Anchorage, you know, an urban environment. The presence of animals creates conflicts, because we see things through the narrow lens of our species, we tend to think of the animals creating the conflict when it's my belief, not just my belief, but it's often human behavior that leads to the conflicts. And I think if we take the time to pay attention to our wild neighbors, consider their perspectives. I mean, some people just don't want to share the city with wild animals, and make it clear. To me, they enrich our lives.
You've written about Alaska's animals for a number of years. Do they continue to surprise you, and do you have favorites?
Chickadees are definitely among my favorites. Black-capped chickadees. Boreal chickadees are pretty cool, too. I actually also write about my meeting with chickadees, and this was in my early 40s, and I pretty much ignored songbirds and birds generally until then, but I had moved up to the hillside, and I invited chickadees in by putting seed out, and they responded, and they just opened a door I never would have imagined, and they enlarged my life in a way I never would imagine. I think chickadees, more than any other animal as an adult in my adulthood, literally changed my life. And then the same thing with them, not to quite the same degree, but my discovery of wood frogs in Anchorage. And part of the lesson of chickadees and wood frogs and other animals is like, wow, how much is out there that we don't notice? One of the things that I hope people will take away, that even what we consider the most common, the most overlooked species that we don't think about, they really do lead remarkable lives. And I hope that I show some of that in the book.
Anchorage nature writer Bill Sherwanet's new book is called Animal Stories. Sherwanet will be talking about his stories at the Anchorage Museum tomorrow, Thursday evening at 7. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jennifer Canfield and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. The general election is November 4th. Polls are open 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. You'll be voting for U.S. Senator, U.S. Representative, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, State Senator, State Representative, and judges. When you go to vote, bring identification. If your name is not on the list or you don't have an ID, you may vote a question ballot. The question ballot updates your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring somebody to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.